Hello, 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 and welcome to My Empty Hands, a podcast about the martial arts with a focus on Kenpo. As always, I am Reggie Darden, and today I have a wonderful guest with me, Mr. Tony Potter. And yeah, we're going to talk some Kenpo and talk some martial arts and talk some teaching and yeah, just all of the good things that we do. So I've kind of changed, or I'm trying to kind of change up how I do these a little bit, and I would go into my background, but we are here for the guest and not me, so I'm just going to say that, you know, I have advanced ranks in Kenpo and Capoeira as my main systems, and then I have some experience with Taekwondo and Hapkido and boxing and you know, we'll get into more as we go, but yeah, now is your time to go ahead and tell us how Kenpo found you, how the martial arts found you, how you got started, and yeah, we'll just take it from the beginning and go from there.
Well, thank you for having me on. This is an honor. You know, I'm really nobody in this Kenpo world. I'm not anybody special. I love what I do.
To differ.
Well, I love this opportunity that's been given to me by God, and I take advantage of it, and I'm running with it. So, you know, I started Kenpo back in 1989, late 89, 90, and I moved to Santa Fe in 88, 89, and the job that I had, I needed a better skill set when it came to fighting. So my boss at the time suggested I go and check out his martial arts school and dabble in a little bit of Kenpo. So I went over to his school and let's just say I got in a horse dance and was sitting in that horse dance doing upward blocks and inward blocks. And I thought it was the stupidest thing on earth. I just could not believe that I was standing there in a horse dance beside some old lady beside me and some young kid beside me. And I'm doing lockout punches. You know what those are. Most people don't, but that's just not the fighting that I was used to. You know, I was worked nightclubs and the fighting was different. Nobody stood in a horse stance. Nobody stood in front of you in a low horse stance and throwing punches. And it just didn't make any sense to me. So I quit. I didn't go back. I just wasn't interested. And then he suggested I come back and try one of the fighting classes. He goes, come and do one of our fighting classes. And I'm like, oh, okay, that sounds a little more fun. So I went to the fighting class and here I am with this teenager, you know, 6'2" teenager. And he's bouncing around like a rabbit and circling me and bouncing around. And, you know, I played college football for a year and I just knew that if I grabbed a hold of him, I'd hurt him. I knew that I could probably beat him up, but I couldn't catch him. And by the time I thought I could catch him, I was out of wind. So that was humbling for me. And so I wound up not going back. And then about a year later, my life was at a point where I really needed something in my life positive. And so I went back into the school and it was me and a friend of mine that went back into the school. And so I had a training partner and started training and, you know, my lifestyle at that time wasn't a positive lifestyle. My family at the time I was married into, they'd make fun of me. It was kind of a joke to them that I was doing martial arts. And so it was that constant, your peers and the people that you're around making fun of you when you're in the room training and they're out there partying. And I was trying to better my life and it was really a struggle. So my martial arts beginning was rough. I learned to love it.
So that first school that was a Kenpo school or was it different?
Yes. My instructor at the time, his name is Larry Hamilton. He trained under JT Wills from the Midwest.
Oh, okay. I'm familiar with that name. Yeah.
Oh yeah. So he trained under him and then he did some seminars with Mr. Parker and he was dabbling in switching over the system into the Parker system at the time. And then Mr. Parker passed away. And then here we are at a school where we were looking to figure out what system we wanted or not. I wasn't involved in the and the decisions at that time. But he was looking around everywhere to try to figure out who he wanted to follow. So, you know, he was dabbling in Huck Planus and Larry Tatum and just so many different instructors, Mike Pick. And, you know, he was trying to figure out where and who he wanted to learn from. And that's kind of was my beginning. I left him for a little bit and went and trained with a lady named Lois Rael, who was under Brian Duffy out of Texas. And then Larry came back into town. I started studying with him again, and I got to my green belt. And that's when I met my wife. She walked in the door with her baby. He's probably a year old. And she walked in the door, and she noticed that her instructor was teaching. And so she went in just to see what's going on, because my instructor was in the music business, and he would travel a lot. So his school would close and then he'd open back up. And so she saw that he was training, and when she walked in, my training partner at the time, his name's Jay, and he had already been with Larry for a while. And I asked him, I said, "Who's that?" And he said, "That's my sister. Leave her alone." So, you know, in walked his sister. And from that moment, I was like, "You got to introduce me." And he goes, "No, you just stay away from her." We worked at the clubs together, and that's how I knew him. And you know, I could say it was love at first sight, but I don't know that she was in love at first sight. She didn't like this burly green belt who was a little rough. But I grew on her. And soon after that, we wound up getting married, and our whole life changed. We took over the school and opened our own school. So we've had our school now going on 23 years. And so many things have changed. You know, when we met Master Speakman, everything changed. My whole trajectory of where I wanted to go in the martial arts, it just changed. And with the guidance of my wife, you know, I truly believe it is a great wife can make an amazing man. And she changed me into who I am today. And I'm very thankful.
Very nice. Yeah. That's, it's really great that, could, you know, get that connection, right away in the school, especially, I know the struggles of having a spouse that is not in the arts, and yeah, I get a certain kind of look when it's like, "Oh, I'm heading to class now." It's like,
so. That is so true. You know, throughout the years of us, we've had our school for so many years. We have students who fall in love with Kempo and they start training, and then they get a girlfriend, and then you don't see them for a couple weeks, and you're like, "Where are you?" And then they're sporadic, and it's kind of like their goals just start changing. And otherwise, we have kids that are in our program, and then we'll have parents say, "Hey, I want to join." And so now we have mom and dads training together, and now you see a whole family starting to change their life. And those are beautiful times. But, you know, school owners around the world, not just in Kempo, but any martial art, probably the biggest struggle is balancing their love for the martial arts and the time that they need to, not that they have to, but they need to and want to spend with their other half, the person that they're planning on spending their life with. It makes it very difficult, because, you know, it martial arts is not a hobby for me. It is the way I live. It's who I am. And, you know, my first instructor used to say, "You are, when you become Kempo, that you know that you can make it work, and you want to become Kempo, and you can't do that part time. You can enjoy it, you can dabble in it, but if you want to be able to teach it and you want to be able to use it, you have to make it yours, and you have to become that." And that's hard when you have somebody that has different goals in your life.
Gotcha. So, you know, you mentioned taking over the school, and I kind of can relate in that I inherited the Capoeira group that I was a student and quickly thrusted into the teaching side of it. So can you talk a little bit about, you know, how it was acquiring the school and kind of those early early steps in that.
Absolutely. You know, I don't want to, there's always history, right? We all have history. Some of us have baggage. Sometimes we have other people's baggage. And I don't want to talk negatively about the past, but the past is the past. And our instructor traveled a lot. And that was probably, he was an amazing Kempoist, but his love for music also tore him apart. So he would leave for a year and then he'd come back and try to retake over the school. And then he would take over the school for a couple of years and then he would leave again. And his black belts would run the school. And then, so we dealt with that for a while. And that's not anything that he can deny. It's just the way it was. Well, we left and we started training. We met Mr. Speakman at a seminar. We were in Albuquerque one day, my wife and I, and we always tell the story that we were driving in Albuquerque and she loves my driving. My driving's fine, but she thinks I get lost. I don't get lost. I just don't care if I turn down a different road. Well, anyway, it was like the Bugs Bunny story, you know, made a left turn in Albuquerque. And we turned down this road and we saw a sign that said, meet the perfect weapon. And then it was Jeff Speakman, a big picture of Jeff Speakman. So we pulled over right away and went in and talked to the people that were there at the school at the time. They're like, yeah, Mr. Speakman's going to be here tomorrow night. And we're like, no way, the perfect weapon. He's going to be here in Albuquerque. And they're like, yeah, he'll be teaching a seminar. So we came back to Santa Fe and we're like, okay, everybody, we got to go to Albuquerque tomorrow. Jeff Speakman is going to be there teaching seminars. So our instructor, his son, my brother-in-law, my wife, now she, let's see, at that time, were we even married? I don't even remember if we, yeah, we were married because we were pregnant with our baby. We went to the seminar. We absolutely loved it. It just blew us away. And so then he's coming back in a couple months. And in the meantime, my partner, Joe Conway, started teaching in Albuquerque. And he had asked me, he goes, do you want to help me teach? You know, we can have the school in Albuquerque. And, you know, I went to my instructor at the time and I said, you know, I want to train with Mr. Speakman. I think we should take the school. At that time, I just got my black belt under Larry. And I said, you know, I really think we need to pursue this. Mr. Speakman has schools all over the world. It's a bigger organization. Rather than just being in our own little world, there's a network, there's family, there's people that want to do what we do and we can help each other get better, right? You know, and he said something to me that I think is very powerful. And it kind of changed how I wanted to pursue teaching. He told me, he goes, you know, I've had all my black belts go and train with Huck Planus and they go and train with this person. They go and train with this person. And they come back and they have all these ideas of what we should do, what I should do with my school. I've been doing martial arts for 40 years. You know, this is, and the reality is my son, Mike, he can still kick their ass. And I looked at him and I go, you know, no disrespect, sir, but when I am in my 50s, when I get to that point and I'm teaching martial arts, I hope, and I really want to have at least 10 or more of my students who are better than me, not holding them down. And I said, I don't agree with you. I don't think this is the way to do it. So we left and we started training in Albuquerque. And at that point, I can hear him better this way. At that point, I got a phone call and he goes, you know, Tony, I'm going to be leaving the school. I'm going to be closing it. Would you like to take over the school? I said, sure. What does that mean? Take over the school. Because I'm not going to take over the school and then you come back. If I take over the school, you are always welcome to come back and be a part of my school, but now it's my school. He said, no, it's yours. I'm leaving. I'm going to Nashville. I'm leaving so you can have the school. So I went to Lupe Garcia, who's the owner of our complex, and where the school was, he was our landlord. And I went to him. At that point, my wife and I were teaching, I think about 18 kids. One was her oldest son, their homeschool PE course. So we were teaching them in our rec center behind our house. And so I asked Lupe Garcia, I said, I'd like to take over the school that, of Mr. Hamilton's. And I understand that there's, you know, some lease issues that he's had. And, you know, I want to take over that and I'll make right whatever's been left. And he said, first of all, you don't take over somebody else's debt. Second of all, I told him, he goes, how many students you have? And I said, well, I have 18. He goes, how much do they pay? I go, they don't pay me. And he goes, wait a minute. You're wanting to take over, you want to rent a spot from me and you're going to be teaching karate, but you're not making any money. How are you going to pay for this? And I told him, I said, I have another business. I had a cleaning business at the time. I said, I have money. I just want a place for my wife and I to train and to be able to teach some kids and teach some Kempo. And he goes, run it like a business and you'll have a business. If you don't run it like a business, you're going to be just like your old instructor. Yes, sir. 8 years later, I think it was 8 years. Dates are hard. We're having a big test. And at that point, he had some of his grandkids that were training with me. His daughter-in-law trained with me. His daughter trained with me. His friend, his son was a good friend of mine. And he comes in during this test, and I'm standing there with Mr. Speakman at the time. And he tells us, he goes, well, I believe Tony's outgrown this school. I think he needs a bigger school. And I told him, I said, sir, I don't want to leave you. You're a good landlord. I like having you as a landlord. And he goes, nah, I'm going to build you a building. Okay. And then he walked away. And Mr. Speakman goes, did you hear what he just said? And I go, yeah, but people say stuff all the time. I don't know. You know, do you believe them? Or, you know, people always talk. If I had every student that said they're going to come to class, I'd have 10,000 students. So about 2 months later, I'm sitting in the office and he walks in and he throws this big pamphlet, bunch of papers. I didn't know what it was at the time. Bunch of papers. Well, it was the building plans for a building. I go, what is that? And he goes, that's your building. Fill in the blanks. I go, fill in the blanks. What does that mean? He goes, well, you got to tell me what you need. Oh, yes, sir. Yes. Yes, sir. And he goes, we're starting construction tomorrow. Whoa, wait a minute. You mean you're building a building? And he goes, I told you I was building a building. He goes, another thing you need to learn is when somebody tells you something or when you tell somebody something, make sure that your word means something. Yes, sir. So that's what happened. We went from a 800 square foot, maybe eight, I think it was 800 square foot facility to almost a 5,000 square foot building. Yes, the rent went up a little bit, which reminds me, you got to remember, this is the guy that said, run it like a business, and you'll stay in business. So when he took my wife and I to lunch, he tells me, he goes, here's your keys to the building, but I'm going to tell you something. Remember 8 years ago when you came to me and I told you, run it like a business so that you can stay in business. And I'm telling you now that if you make teaching martial arts all about the money, I'm going to raise your rent. So run it like a business, but don't forget your passion. My passion was teaching kids how to defend themselves, teaching kids how to better their lives, how to be productive members of society. He saw that. He saw all of the good that came out of our school, and he saw it was never about the money. He said, when you make it about the money, things are going to change. Yes, sir. And that was a huge lesson for me from him. So that's how we started our school. Now we're 23 years strong. We have almost 200 students, active students in our school. And it's just has completely changed our life. You know, I got into the martial arts because of my fists, because of the act of violence, really, ultimately. You know, I played college football. I loved action. I loved violence. So I got into martial arts because I seemed to always get in fights. And now I teach martial arts because I really love that. I love the art of motion. I don't like the act of violence. There's too much violence in this world. So it is funny how things shift over the years. And that's where we're at now. You know, I have an amazing wife who supports and is right beside me. She's not behind me. She's right beside me. Sometimes she's in front of me. and sometimes she's... you know, lets me lead. And sometimes she's walking right beside me. And then we have our two boys. You know, my oldest son is 25 years old. He just got married a few weeks ago. And he married my third degree black belt. That girl was one of my students since she was 7 years old. And then my middle son, my middle child, is 21 years old. They got married a couple months ago. And he married another one of my third degree black belts who's been training with me since she was a young girl. And then I have my daughter, Skye, who's 14 years old, and she's one of my junior black belts, teen black belt, working in her adult program now. But these, we have a team, you know, and it's an amazing team. And you know, school owners around our around the country in the sequence system, they're envious. And they're like, Potter, man, how'd you do this? How did you create this? And I didn't purposely try to create anything. We teach with passion. We teach with one purpose, and that is to change lives and help people be productive members of society, give them confidence, give them tools, give them a skill set, and let them know that they're not alone in this crazy world. And it's worked. You know, we are very strong Christians. We don't push our Christianity onto any of our students. I have multiple races and multiple just differences in our school. But the one common theme is the family. And that's not just with our school. It's with all of our schools all over the world. Mr. Speakman, you talked to him the other day. The one thing that we have in our organization, the Kempo 5.0, is we are a huge family. And when somebody needs somebody, we're there. When somebody's hurting, we're there. We help each other. We're not competing against each other. We're competing against this world, this crazy, crazy mess of a world, to try to help people get to a better place. And so it's, you know, it's a beautiful thing when I can go to New Zealand and stay at somebody's home and they just treat me as if I'm part of their family, because I am. I can go to Australia, I can go to Europe, and they come here, and I have friends from England that come to my house, and he'll stay at my house for a week, him and his fiance, and they'll stay at our house. And that's just the way it is all over the world. It's not that I'm anybody special. That's why I said earlier, I'm nobody special. I'm just one of Mr. Speakman's instructors, school owners, that has a pretty good thing going. I have something special. We have a group here in Santa Fe that is unique. We do many things together. We host an event we call Kempo in the Mountains every year. Kempo in the Mountains was an idea. We were camping one year. You know, we live up here in the ski basin, so we go camping. And there was about three of us, a couple sets of parents, and me and my wife and kids, and our kids and their kids were friends, so we went camping. And they're like, man, we have a test next week. Wouldn't it be awesome if we tested the kids up here in the mountains? And I went, well, what a great idea. You know, I didn't invent it. Other people have done it before. It's not like I'm the first one that ever did Kempo in the woods or something. But I'm like, what a great idea. Let's do it. So we did. We had the test up in the mountains. We did a little camping trip. The next year, we had a bigger test. And the next year, we had a bigger test. And by about the third year, there were 300-400 people up there. And we have 100 people sleeping in tents and campers. And we'll have 119 people on the sand or in the dirt. And they're testing in their gi, getting bloody and dirty. And you know, I'm dumping water on them. I'm dumping buckets of water. You can go to the website and just see pictures of it. Mm-hmm. I'm dumping buckets of water on their head while they're in the mud fighting. Because that's what if you're going to teach people how to fight, that's how fights happen. Fights don't happen in a dojo. Fights happen in parking lots.
Exactly.
They happen at beaches. They happen at beach parties and different gatherings, you know, and those environments aren't good to you. So you need to be able to handle those environments. And so we teach these kids that they can overcome those things. You know, when somebody's on top of you and water's being dumped on your face, get up. And they do. They learn how to get up. And then there's the human aspect of it, just the families coming together. You know, when you have a large school, we have Tiny Tigers, Little Dragons, four levels of kids classes, adult classes. I have my special, they're my I Am kids. I'll talk about them in a minute. But I have all of these people who have never met each other. So classes are at different times, we wound up having people that were at the same school. They're training with us and they're cousins. They didn't even know their cousin was training at our school because they never see each other in class. We go to Kemple in the Mountains and we're like, oh, wow, I didn't know you were training here. And they're like, oh, yeah, we didn't know you were training here. And yeah, it's a beautiful thing. And it just brings the community together. And these kids are so excited. Last year, we had probably 500 people up at our property in Chama. We had 126 people in the sand pit testing. It was an amazing event. It was just a beautiful weekend.
Yeah, I like the connection. I like the community and the connection and that aspect of it, not to get into, the Kempo politics and drama, but, it's goes without saying that, there's a lot of it in the world, unfortunately. And it's nice to be able to hear the, that there are places where, we are working to connect with each other and community and get that social part of it back with the, with the pandemic and everything, and just everybody kind of is getting away from being around each other and being that social part of it. It's nice to see there's, opportunities to get that back.
Absolutely. You talk about the pandemic. There's so many schools closed and they never could open up again. They just wound up disappearing. And a lot of instructors just decided, I'm going to move on and I got to make a living and I can't really do this. It's not paying the bills. And so they never reopened. I was blessed with the fact that I had two teenagers at the time who are technically knowledgeable. My son, you heard on the phone, he gets on the phone and he'll tell us what to do and how to fix things. And we never skipped a class. So when the whole country shut down, on Monday, we had class. We had Zoom class. And we didn't lose but maybe 5% of our student base. So we taught Zoom classes all the way through that period. And as soon as we were able to get people in here, we had some people in here. We had some people still on Zoom. We never lost connection with those people we love so much. And it wasn't about the dollar. It was about just giving these kids an outlet. I mean, they had those kids running all over the place, having so much fun in their house and bringing grandma into class and bringing their pets into class. And they just made it fun. And so you make the best out of the worst. And that's what the martial arts teaches us. You have to overcome. You have to be able to breathe through the problems you have and the bad situations. So that's what my boys did during the pandemic. And we never slowed down. It was a blessing to have them at the time because a lot of martial arts teachers just could not handle teaching on Zoom. They couldn't do it.
Yeah, it's definitely a challenge for sure. So it's good to hear that you were able to make it through that unscathed. And
well, yeah, and I was talking about my I Am class. I created a foundation this year, January. I started it, and it's called It All Matters. It All Matters. Now you can see this, other people can't, but It All Matters Inc. You can go to the website, itallmattersinc.com. I teach about 60 kids with cognitive or developmental disabilities, Down syndrome and cerebral palsy and autism, ADHD, and just different disabilities. Our country now has more people with disabilities than ever before. Ever before. More kids are being born today with autism than ever before. And there's different people have different theories, and I won't get into that. But the point is, what do you do? They need structure. They need to feel worthy. They learn. And so often our streets are filled. You look at most cities in America, they're full of homeless people, right? Well, many of them are people who are mentally challenged and they're left alone. They never were given the skills or the tools to be able to take care of themselves. And I truly believe that if more people would do the martial arts, especially a good martial arts program, it doesn't have to be mine. I mean, this ain't mine. It's I don't own it. I own my school, but Kempo, I just choose Kempo and Jiu-Jitsu because those are what I teach. But I honestly think anything's better than nothing. But if these people had an opportunity to do something positive in their life, I think we would have less homeless. So I created a class, It All Matters. They're called my I Am class. So I now teach about 16 kids on Zoom twice a week. They're all over the state of New Mexico. And I teach them Kempo with a lot of sarcasm. And they have a blast. And these kids have, you know, mental challenges, not from abuse, but from the way they were born. And it gives them a little joy. You know, what are they going to remember? I have people here that are doctors and lawyers, and they don't remember things. So I don't judge people on that. I think everybody should have the opportunity to train. You know, our mission statement for the It All Matters is to create an avenue of inclusivity for all to have the opportunity to participate in a positive and highly qualified martial arts program, regardless of a person's physical or cognitive or financial limitations. That's our creed. And I stand by that. I really don't think a person's financial limitations should dictate their ability to do something as amazing as the martial arts. And I say martial arts. I love Kempo. And I love Kempo 5-0 for many reasons. I love the art of motion. I think what Master Speedman and us, you know, that's one joy of having be a part of this system is he's not a dictator. He doesn't tell us this is why we do it. And why do we do it that way? Because this is the way it's done. It's never been like that. It's a collective group. We are Kempo 5.0. He's not Kempo 5.0. We are. And he's one of us. And we love him for that. We love his leadership and his willingness to let us be a part of the decision making. I mean, ultimately, most decisions, it comes down to him. You know, he's going to make the yes or the no. But he hears us. He listens to us. And we make adjustments because of the experiences that we've faced. And that's just a beautiful thing. So I choose Kempo 5.0 because of that. I mean, my friends around the world, I just love it. But I don't get into the, so which system is best? Well, Kempo is best for me. Taekwondo might be best for you. Capoeira may be best for somebody else. You know, I love jiu-jitsu. I became friends with Mr. Bankins years ago. I think it was 18 years ago. Started training in jiu-jitsu with him, and he was dabbling in the Kempo world, and life kind of went crazy for him for a while. And then a few years ago, he came back and he goes, I want to train Kempo again. And he goes, I asked him, are you bored or what? he laughed. So it's ironic. I don't know anybody else that does this, but my jiu-jitsu instructor, I'm his Kempo instructor. And we've been doing this now for quite a few years, and it's a beautiful thing. You know, his instructor's Hoist Gracie. So, you know, I'm creating a shirt that says Kempo 5.0 on one side, Bankin's Combat Jiu-Jitsu on the other side, and on the back it's going to say the best of both worlds, because I truly believe that the jiu-jitsu that he's training, which is under Hoist Gracie, I absolutely love the style. I love the way it's been created, the system. It's a self-defense-based system. It doesn't take anything away from my Kempo. It adds to it. And my Kempo adds to his jiu-jitsu. So they're beautiful together. Our Kempo 5.0, I'm not the first one you've talked to, but the reason the 5.0 came in is because it was changed. We saw loopholes. We saw problems. And we had to address them. And one problem was, if you're teaching a self-defense system and you don't teach people how to fight on the ground, you're lying to them, period. Because my instructor, I asked him years ago when I was working at the nightclub, what do you do if somebody takes you down? He goes, don't let them take you down. My gosh, how ridiculous of a statement is that now? You know, maybe in the 80s, but now that doesn't work. Because there are people that have never done a martial arts class ever that will take you down in a moment because they did wrestling in junior high. And if you don't know what to do when you're on the ground, you're like a shark out of water. You have no skill set. You have no tools. And you're on the ground and you think poking them in the eye or grabbing their groin or biting them or pinching them is going to save your life. It's not. So you better have some answers. You know, we started this ground system so that we have answers against the jiu-jitsu practitioners, the MMA person. And then we started to get better at it. And then we realized, hey, why not just allow this to add to our arsenal? Now, I don't have to beat you to a pulp. I can just choke you out. You know, I don't have to smash your face and hurt my hands. I can do other stuff. But if I have to, I can do my Kempo. You know, and it's a beautiful thing. I love where the 5-0 has gone. It's a beautiful system. You know, a person, we've chosen, many of us, not all, but many of us have chosen to increase our skill set in jiu-jitsu so that we have that knowledge on the ground. Master Speakman did it, and multiple school owners around the world. And what we realized was those individuals who have done jiu-jitsu and are doing Kempo, they're good. They're really good. They are as good on the ground as they are standing up, and they're as good standing up as they are on the ground. And that's dangerous to somebody who wants to mess with one of those people. But at the same time, a person that just does jiu-jitsu, I think they're okay, but there are some loopholes in that. And how do you start? You know, if you're doing the sport jiu-jitsu and you have no knowledge of striking, you're going to be in trouble against a striker in a nightclub, because you're not going to do jiu-jitsu in a nightclub, not the sport jiu-jitsu. That's why I like the Gracie system. It starts standing up. You know, I think the first 4 or 5 months of classes was all stand-up material. And I'm like, what happened to jiu-jitsu? Because I've done jiu-jitsu 18 years, and it's only been the last 5 that I've done the Gracie system. And, mm-hmm. and I'm like, wow, this is different. Yeah, it's different. And then you're thinking, Hoist Gracie, why is he teaching it that way? Isn't that the UFC guy, the guy that did MMA? And mm-hmm. why is it their self-defense techniques? And so for me, it's great. I love both. But my Kempo family, I just can't talk enough about them and how beautiful they are all around the world. I just have so many role models in this world of Kempo. You know, Kempo as a whole, very political. Everybody wants to be the master, and mm-hmm. everybody thinks they know more than somebody else. And I don't get into that. I love them all. I really appreciate what they've done and the lives they've touched over the years. None of us are perfect. We've made bad choices in our life, and you know, that's my opinion. I think all people who are teachers are trying to do the best they can, as long as they're not making it about the money. You know, don't make it about the money.
Yeah. No, I agree. It's, you know, important to be about you know, the students and you know, the community, and once again, having that connection is important. And as far as, you know, the training goes, it's, you know, one style doesn't fit all. And I think, you know, if you want to be a complete martial artist, then yeah, you want to be able to work in all the various ranges, and you know, you want to, you know, be open to different things. You know, Bruce Lee says, you know, don't limit yourself, you know, to one system, one style. Actually, I think maybe I'm quoting Bloodsport, but the theory, you know, that applies to all of the martial arts. You know, you have to be on different be able to be a part of kind of all the different arts to be complete there. So yeah, I can totally relate to that. So,
yeah, very true.
I am in the newly part of the instructors program at my school. So I'm, you know, not new to teaching, because I, you know, taught capoeira for many years, but new-ish to the Kempo teaching world. So Can you talk a little bit about your early experiences in teaching, and then we'll kind of move into what kind of advice do you have for people in my situation where they're new instructors, and what kind of advice you would give on that?
I had a very good instructor at the beginning. His Kempo was very good. His motion, his movement was very good. And my wife and I, that's the way we taught. When we met Mr. Speakman, it just blew us away. It blew us away how he has a phrase that said, lead by example, follow by choice. And then there was another poster we saw, and it said sustained excellence. And we went, sustained excellence. That's what we want. You know, with Master Speakman, when we joined with him, we really started teaching a lot. You know, at the beginning, it was just teaching some of the motion of Kempo, because I was a new black belt and I was just trying to teach the system. And so teaching kids and we were very being strict, you know, blocking set needs to be a certain way, kicking set needs to be a certain way, the forms and techniques and the sets need to be the way they're taught, right? And I appreciated that system. Structure is very important. If you want to be sustainable, you got to have structure. Well, when we went to the very first belt test and we realized that every single one of those black belts that are out there testing, all of them weren't out there testing. They were all out there participating in a test. And Master Speakman makes every single one of his black belts, if they're at the camp that year, you got to be in the test, whether or not you are promoting. That's the sustained excellence. You are required in our system to know 80% of your material, 100% good. And then the other 20%, you get one or two tries to figure it out and make it better and or else. And we take that to heart. So I'm very picky. I'm you know, some of the people around the around our organization, they, oh, Mr. Potter, he's pretty strict. Yes. If you're gonna claim me I heard Mr. Speakman talking about the other day, if you're gonna wear a fifth degree black belt, then you better know every single bit of the material. You can make a mistake. We all make mistakes. It's not about that. And some people are older and some people are disabled, and there's always that stuff. But the reality is, if you're holding a rank and you want to wear that rank on your belt, then show me. You know, my kids, they know. Okay, kids, line up. Bobby, do kicking set one. I forgot it. Okay, Bobby, take off your belt, put it on the wall. What? Take your belt off and put it on the wall. Why? Because you don't know what's on your belt. If you don't know what's on your belt, take your belt off, period. Now, within that class period, he can earn his belt back, because it's amazing what happens to memory when you're threatened with, consequence. And when you hold people accountable, I think we should all hold each other accountable, right? And when you hold somebody accountable, it's amazing how good they get, or they don't, and they just go away. Well, that's, guess what? That's a reality too. But if you're going to be in our system, you got to know your material. And so that's how we started our school, and that's how we are now. Okay. Is it how I am now? Yes. But now, like I said, I teach at least 60 kids with cognitive disabilities. Is that person going to remember blocking set one perfect if he's already learning kicking set and striking set and finger set? Most of them, no. So why am I teaching them? Because they need this as well. So there are exceptions. I've learned over the years that there are exceptions. But you don't make that exception for everybody and just say, okay, because I teach somebody with Down syndrome and he can't do form one at a high level, the rest of you are off the hook. No. I know how good this is. I always tell the kids, well, you just made a mistake. I'll have somebody, they'll do a form or they'll do a technique and they do it great. I go, good job. That was amazing. But you just made a huge mistake. And they're like, what? You just showed me how good you are. Because now I expect it. And I expect you to get be that good and sustain that and get better. Don't ever let me see something else. And don't let yourself ever see you do something else. When you know you can be exceptional. And unfortunately, our society is being okay with everybody just not being exceptional. There's no accountability. That's why we have people thinking it's okay to live on the streets. It's okay to quit your job. It's okay to quit your marriage. It's okay to give up. We don't. And that I just, yes, there's exceptions. And there are some people that just can't perform at the same level as me. But I want you to be able to perform at the same level, at the level that you can, and then build from there. So that's how we run our school now. You know, that's exactly what we do now.
Very nice. Very nice. Very nice. Okay, so we're going to move into our lightning round here. And just kind of some few questions that I throw out there to kind of get us wrapped up. And you get to be the lucky one in that I'm going to add a new question here. I'm going to try out a new question. So we'll see how that works out. So you get to be the guinea pig for this one. First we'll get to the standard ones. First one being, do you have a favorite technique?
My favorite technique would probably, you know, we've adjusted unfurling crane. So we made some adjustments. We didn't, I don't like saying change. The word change is bad. But unfurling crane, the way we've adjusted it in the 5-0 system, it's a beautiful technique. I like the techniques to teach, but I honestly just like motion. I think one of my favorite techniques isn't even a technique in the system. You know, it's a drill that I created to teach people motion, and it works. I've used it live, and it's very effective. My son just walked by and he just did it because he knows what my favorite technique is. You know, get your hands up and smack them in the chin with a heel palm. You know. Have you ever played soccer? When you play soccer and you are not soccer, but volleyball, and you serve the volleyball overhand, that motion is the same motion as pitching a baseball. And that motion, that heel palm downward across the jaw, will drop the biggest of men. And it's just motion, you know? It's a combination of maybe a little parting wings and a little bit of shield and hammer. And it's just motion. I don't like getting into a technique that I like so much, because I really think in a fight, you're not going to do a technique. You're going to do something. It's going to be a mixture of a bunch of techniques. And if you're trying to remember a technique, you're never going to make it work on the street. You know, that's kind of the beauty of the jiu-jitsu. You're not doing a technique. You're just moving. And then that comes and you do that and then you change it to that because they did this. And that's the beauty of Kempo. Kempo is the art of motion. It's not the art of techniques. You know, in my eyes. Who am I?
I like it. I like it. All right. Next question. Do you have a favorite form and or set?
I love finger set. Finger set one is a beautiful set because I can't say I love poking people in the eye or ripping people's eyes or ripping their face or heel palming them in the head or reaching down and heel palming their groin and ripping I can't say I like all that. But I love what finger set teaches. I could teach a whole seminar on finger set. I think it's a beautiful set. There's so many things in there. Form-wise, you know, form six is, man, I learned form six 23 years ago. And then I just learned it again in the fifth and above training. And I was on Zoom. I didn't get to be there. I couldn't be in Vegas with the rest of my friends. And I'm listening to Master Speakman teach form six and go over things that I had never heard before. It gives me chills today. I'm like, oh, it was such a good lesson because there's so much in form six. You know what the crazy thing is? And you know many. How many people have gotten their black belts and then stop because they think they got it? They're done. Yeah. They haven't even learned form six yet. you ain't done. There's so much more to do. There's Form 7 and Form 8. Form 6 is just... And then you get into Form 8 and the way we do our knives, the way Master Speedman has created our knife techniques and off of what he was taught by Master Parker, you know, and the private trainings that he had. Form 8 is beautiful. Form 7, it has sticks in your hands. I like Form 7. But Form 6 is just, you know, flowering hands, letting those hands just move and continuously move. And then your goal is to just continuously make it better. That's the beauty of it. I don't think you ever get Form 6. I don't think it's a form you can just say, okay, he has it. Well, because you start watching it and then you record it and you rewind it and watch it again. You're like, oh, he could have done this. He could have done that. And when you're watching it, you're going, man, that was beautiful. So you're always refining, right?
Yeah. No, the second you think you've got it, that means you need to train more.
That's the way you need to have a wife watch you. Or a wife that does martial arts, at least.
That's, yeah. Very nice. Right. Next question. If there is anyone that you could train with, living or dead, fictional or non-fictional, besides Ed Parker, who would that be?
You took away Ed Parker. See, I never got to train.
You know,
with Mr.
when I
Parker.
First started asking that question, I didn't add that in, and then after a few guests, I realized, oh wait a second, this is a Kenpo podcast, so yeah, I have to take Ed Parker out of the equation. So,
you know, I've trained with many martial artists over the years. I've been blessed to train with, of course, Master Speakman and I was very good friends and I got to know Mr. Angel really well, but I never got to train with him. I would have loved to have the opportunity to train with him. I've trained with Benny the Jet Yukitas. I've trained with, you know, Bob White, and I've trained with Knatzer, and I trained with Tom Kelly, and I trained with Brian Duffy and John Sepulveda. You know, honestly, my favorite instructor, I would say my wife.
It's a good answer. I like it.
Yeah, you know, Mrs. Potter's she's overlooked often, you know, because she's in the office, and so she teaches. When we get to watch her teach, I sometimes just watch her teach, and I'm just blown away. I'm like, holy cow, I didn't realize she knew that. I didn't realize, wow. She just blows me away, you know. And, you know, sometimes we don't allow instruction by people who we think we're superior to, you know, and that's a problem that many of us martial artists have. We don't allow ourselves to learn from people who we feel may not qualify, you know. She qualifies. I would have loved to have the opportunity to train with her when she was younger. That would have been great.
Very nice. Very nice. All right. So now we're going to get to the final and the new question here. So I'll have to refine the parameters of this, but can you give a recommendation? Let's limit it. We won't limit it to Kenpo, but some sort of martial arts recommendation. So let me kind of clarify this. So it could be, you know, a piece of media, a book, a movie, a TV show, a video game, or, you know, somebody to train with, or I don't know, some sort of martial arts related recommendation of any kind. Or any, you know, medium or whatnot.
Master Speakman gave each of us I don't know that he gave everybody, but he gave me one, and he's given a few others this book, but he gave me this book, and he talks about it often, and it's called Don't Shoot the Dog. I'm going to grab it real quick, but it's called Don't Shoot the Dog. And It's written by Karen Pryor, and she's a dolphin trainer. That's what it looks like. Look it up. It is on how to teach. It's how to teach. Very and it's, you know, I've read all the Parker books. I thought they were great. I've read many, many books. The Book of Five Rings, you know, many, many different books on how to dominate somebody. You know, how to destroy somebody. It reminds me of a quote. I was doing MMA when at the beginning of my training, and Master Speakman's asked me, he goes, why are you doing that? You know, I became an MMA promoter. I was a promoter, and he goes, why are you doing that? And I go, you know, I want to test myself. I want to see how I do. And he goes, when you rate your success in life on the failure of someone else, you might want to reevaluate your goals. And it ties right in with this book, because this book is on how to use positive reinforcement to get what you want. And that's how Mr. Speakman's taught us. You know, it's read on how to teach people, how to change their lives, how to better people's lives. You know, the Bible, it's a great way to learn. You know, read that. It'll confuse you, but it'll also teach you amazing things. But you gotta kind of get some help on interpreting it sometimes, just like any book. You know, there's so many. You can't just nail it down to one. I think that the key is, don't limit yourself to one. Don't limit yourself to one way of thinking, because you'll get one master, and if he's ego-driven, he's going to think that his way is the only way. And you get a book, and you read that book, and you read a book written by somebody that does jiu-jitsu. You know, Jocko, I don't know if you know who that is, but he's a Navy SEAL who does jiu-jitsu, and he'll tell you that jiu-jitsu is the only way. He doesn't believe in anything else. You don't need anything else. He's amazing. I love his books, but I don't agree with that. I think we need to just have our minds open. And if our minds are open, we're going to make a better world. We can have conversations with people of different religion beliefs and different sexual beliefs and different. We gotta have an open mind. So I don't want to limit it to one book or.
Gotcha. No, that's a great answer. I like that. All right, so now we shall move into our point for shameless self-promotion. So now is your time to plug anything you want or say anything you want about anything that maybe we didn't cover that you'd like to get out there. Now is your chance. You have the floor, and then we'll close out from there.
Well, I thank you for that. I want to talk about the itallmattersinc.com. It All Matters Inc. My goal with It All Matters Inc. is to allow for all to be able to participate in the martial arts, no matter of their financial inabilities, especially their cognitive or their developmental disabilities. And so I created a foundation for that. Go to itallmattersinc.com, go to the website, contribute to that fund. Now, somebody's going to say, well, he's just trying to make money for himself. No, because my goal with It All Matters Inc. is to be able to allow all, I'm not the only martial artist. You know this because you teach and you've been to schools. I'm not the only martial artist that has allowed somebody to come in their school and train for free. I know I'm not. Almost all martial artists will allow somebody to come in, and they hear their struggles and they want to help them out. So they know, they believe that what they're teaching can benefit that kid's life, right? You know, so you let them come in. Well, who pays for that? The martial artist pays for that. This foundation is created because I believe if it grows, I could be, this foundation could potentially cover that gap of revenue, where that can help out other schools to be able to do more in our community. Martial artists are limited, and most of them have jobs. They teach at their school. Oh, can you come and teach? Can you come and teach at our facility? But I can't pay you. No, I can't. I need to make a living. Okay. Well, a foundation like It All Matters Inc. could potentially, it's going to right now make a difference in our school, but I want it to make a difference in other schools, not just mine, because it's not about me. It's about the kids in our community, the kids and the, the people in our community that need what I believe has changed my life, my faith and my art. Those two things have completely changed my life. And I want to share that with others. And I'm able to do that through this foundation. And I really would like people to support it. I think it's a great cause. Just go to the website, itallmattersinc.com, and see what you can do. See if you want to join the team. And if there's martial arts schools around the country that have the same idea, I went out and I did the legwork. I went out and got this thing going. I want to make a difference. I know I'm not the only one, and that's the reality. That's why when you ask me to be on this podcast, I'm like, me? Who am I? I'm nobody. I'm just Tony Potter living in Santa Fe. I just love my life. I love the people in it.
Fantastic. I like it. That's definitely a good thing that we should all support. So. Yeah, I'll definitely put a link for that in the show notes there, and make sure to get the word out. So, yeah, thank you for that.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you, Reggie. I appreciate your time today. Thank you for reaching out.
Yeah, no, thank you so much for being on. I enjoyed hearing your story, and I hope that we can do this again, and you know, focus on a more specific topics. Down the road, but yeah, no, thank you so much for taking the time to sit here and chat with me and get through some of the technical difficulties we had, but we got it worked out, and yeah, no, thank you again, and can't Absolutely. Wait to get this out for everyone to hear.
Absolutely. Well, thank you, sir. You have a great day.
All right, thank you. Thank you for listening to My Empty Hands. If you enjoyed the show, please share it with a friend. If you didn't enjoy it, please share it with an enemy. If you'd like to be a guest, or if you would like to recommend a guest for the show, please email me at podcast@talkingkenpo.com. Thank you.